This episode of The Sweaty Penguin is brought to you by Diet Coke. Have you ever wanted to feel like you were in a cult but didn't have the time for the commitment? Try Diet Coke today.
Welcome to episode 128 of The Sweaty Penguin, Antarctica's hottest podcast. I'm your host, Ethan Brown. Today, we'll be talking about Qatar, which is coincidentally the same way FIFA kicks off every board meeting. She's really that girl you know isn't right for you, you tried it and it didn't work, but you still just can't help but wonder. Especially now that she's trying to date the Olympics, too, like, she can't have moved on that fast, right? You may be familiar with Qatar due to them hosting the 2022 FIFA Men's World Cup, the actual event, not just having the cup for safekeepings. This brought a lot of attention to the country, and garnered discussion around the health of workers, environmental issues, corruption, and how Qatar is addressing or not addressing these various challenges. Today, we'll be taking on a small piece of that, specifically discussing the North Dome gas field. The North Dome gas field is in northern Qatar, and is the world's largest natural gas field, aside from that dump truck rear end I carry around. This gas field is home to 11 carbon bomb projects that together have the potential to emit over 41 billion tons of carbon dioxide, making it a force to be reckoned with, but still doesn't measure up to me in the slightest. We've covered 12 carbon bombs so far, each named after one of the apostles. Need a refresher on what carbon bombs are? Well, let's head back to Qatar for their newest event, the Climate Cup.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to what promises to be the most thrilling match of the season, the Climate Cup. We are live from Qatar, and it's the planet against the fierce team of carbon bombs.
That's right. The stakes have never been higher. We've been hearing whispers of these carbon bombs for a while now. The Guardian did a stellar job with their investigation last year, giving us a deep dive into these plans that before were largely hidden.
Absolutely mind-boggling. They revealed 195 oil and gas projects set to emit over 1 billion tons of carbon each, adding up to 646 billion tons of carbon emissions.
And just to give our listeners an idea, in 2019, the whole world emitted about 59 billion tons of greenhouse gases. So imagine adding up to 646 billion tons from just these carbon bombs. It's staggering.
The match is underway, and the planet's defense has been remarkable, trying to tackle each carbon bomb with renewable energy, sustainability practices, and international climate agreements.
But these 11 carbon bombs are from the North Dome gas field right here in Qatar, and it's the biggest gas field in the world. The planet needs to be careful in this match if they're going to make a goal. An international climate goal, that is.
Right you are. The planet is moving upfield, though, just outside the penalty box. They need to be careful, because missing this goal would be absolutely heartbreaking.
They take the shot, and...
Well, I can't give you the ending. That's for us to decide. I did bet the spread on the planet, though, so I'm gonna be out a lot of cash if they don't make that goal. I ran out of promotions on Fox Superbet. To sum up, the North Dome gas field has 11 projects that are classified as carbon bombs, and as a result, there has been a lot of conflict around Qatar's fossil fuel industry. I mean, it's almost as big as the debate on the pronunciation of the word GIF. Yes, it's GIF, not peanut butter. Qatar has, of course, received a lot of benefits from these resources, shifting the country to be one of the wealthiest per capita in the world. But there are also issues that stem from this natural gas, environmental, social, economic, and geopolitical. Today we'll discuss how natural gas transformed Qatar, what some of the issues have been as a result of this production, and what comes next as Qatar works to make a name for itself on the world stage. If you want to take 2 minutes to help out the Sweaty Penguin, you can either leave us a 5-star rating and review, or join our Patreon at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. Doing either earns you a special shout-out at the end of the show. Joining the Patreon gets you merch, bonus content, and a whole lot more. But first, it's time for North Dome Gas Field 101. The gas formation itself is actually even bigger than the North Dome gas field. The entire formation is not entirely owned by Qatar, but actually shared with Iran. Remember, sharing is caring, folks. The part of the field that's in Iran is called South Pars. And I know what you're thinking, turn that S into a K, and you've got yourself an Emmy Award-winning animated adult comedy. Today, we'll be focused on the Qatar side of the formation, though, which extracts upwards of 3 times the amount of natural gas as the Iran side. I guess they're not exactly sharing equally. Makes me nervous about the caring part. The North Dome gas field is an offshore gas field, meaning it needs special technology to get the resources out, like Dulcilax. The majority of the gas is found at a water depth of 213 feet and then an additional 9,800 feet below the sea floor. Instead of using Aquaman to reach these resources, we use something called a jackup rig. It offers some spots in a submarine, but the spots were taken. This drilling rig is positioned on top of a floating barge that can be towed into position by a ship. Once above the area that needs to be drilled, it can extend support legs down to the seabed to lock itself in position before beginning any of the extraction processes. And that, my darling, is also how babies are made. This process works for the North Dome field for 3 reasons. 1. 213 feet deep isn't that crazy in the grand scheme of things. 2. The drill has a bad hip and this is just the position that works best for him. And 3. The field doesn't need large-scale drills to extract the resources like the ones required for fracking operations. As they say, it's not the size that matters, it's how you use it. The North Dome gas field holds a lot of resources, most impressive being the whopping 18.58 trillion cubic meters of natural gas held in its depths. But that's not all. There are also 41 million barrels of NGLs found in the reserve, which I'm not gonna lie, NGL doesn't stand for not gonna lie, but actually natural gas liquids. Natural gas liquids are a group of hydrocarbons such as ethane, propane, and butane, which sort of live on the spectrum between natural gas and crude oil. They're still figuring out what they are, and it's quite the topic at Thanksgiving dinner. Aunt Kathy wants answers. But with Qatar being a peninsula, and having so much natural gas, the biggest export by far for Qatar is liquefied natural gas, also known as LNG. LNG is different from NGL. NGL is already liquid underground, but LNG is regular natural gas that has actually been cooled to negative 259 degrees Fahrenheit until it is a dense liquid. Qatar has been exporting LNG since 1997 and passed Indonesia in 2006 as the world's largest LNG exporter. As you can imagine, this process to cool natural gas, keep it liquid, and transport it afterwards is extremely energy intensive. It's like trying to keep a baby asleep while you're traveling. Since the North Dome gas field is offshore, this process is all done on site, and the LNG is transported back to land via train. If you ask me, they should just transport a ton of the gas in party balloons and bring them over, then freeze them. LNG, sponsored by Party City, coming to a neighborhood near you. And in addition to being energy intensive, LNG is also much more prone to leaking as compared to regular natural gas. Between that and the energy required to create and transport it, LNG actually can result in around 2 times the greenhouse gas emissions of regular natural gas. She's real quirky like that. It's worth noting that at the North Dome gas field, Qatar is actually working to increase its LNG production via a new expansion project that was first announced in 2017 and is set to be operational by 2025. The project is set to cost over $28 billion and will increase LNG production by 43%. I mean, the only other thing I can think of that increases liquefied gas production by 43% is the spicy potato soft taco at Taco Bell. Excuse me. And speaking of gas, being the world's largest gas field, carbon dioxide isn't the only greenhouse gas we need to chaperone at this dance. I mentioned that the North Dome gas field has 11 carbon bombs. Well, 7 of those 11 projects also qualify as methane bombs. Methane bombs are projects that, through intentional and accidental leaks, could release over 12.1 million tons of methane into the atmosphere under reasonable assumptions. Since methane is a more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, 12.1 million tons of methane would have the equivalent warming of 1 billion tons of CO2 over a 20-year period. In other words, not good. At North Dome, 7 projects hit that threshold, combining for a total of over 236 million tons of methane emissions. Add in the other 4 carbon bombs, and we're up to 276 million tons of methane. That's more or less equivalent to all the cow farts in the world for 2 years, just from one gas field. Where is all this methane coming from? Well, natural gas is, for the most part, methane. And via practices such as flaring, venting, and gas leaks, that methane can escape into the atmosphere. In Qatar, flaring is a common practice that, no, isn't lighting your farts on fire, but combusting excess gas during the process of oil and gas recovery, often used when there is need for pressure relief, disposing of waste materials, and controlled burning of substances to ensure they don't combust at the wrong time. Honestly, sounds exactly like a wet fart to me. In all fairness, flaring is preferable to just leaking gas, because by burning it, you convert some of that methane into carbon dioxide. However, it's not a perfect process, so you do still leak some methane, and even if it were perfect, you're also just wasting natural gas that could otherwise be sold and used. So it's not ideal to see that Qatar flares around 1 billion cubic meters of gas each year. And while many countries have regulations or restrict the amount of flaring that can occur, Qatar has no regulations prohibiting or reducing flaring, which helps lead to the large methane emissions produced at the North Dome gas field. Natural gas from the North Dome gas field isn't just polluting the air, but also the water. It's like splashing in a puddle. I'm glad you're so energized, but now I'm wet, and not in a fun I-paid-to-sit-in-the-splash-zone-at-blooming group kind of way. The North Dome gas field is located in the Persian Gulf, which is home to a lot of wildlife. One notable set of species in the area is called the bony fish, also known as fish that tells you 5 minutes into your first date that his place is just a block away, his roommates are out of town, and he has ad-free Hulu. Honestly, worth it for the Hulu. He might be a keeper. These bony fish are very abundant in the Persian Gulf and can play a variety of important roles in the ecosystems, but unfortunately, they're facing threats. A 2019 biological conservation study found the Persian Gulf is currently experiencing a threat to 8.2% of its bony fish species, primarily due to climate change and oil and gas extraction. In even worse news, another 10% of them stopped being bony and now want to get married and get a house in Vermont. Another important species in the Persian Gulf is coral reefs. Coral reefs provide homes for wildlife like fish and crabs that in turn provide jobs for local communities. They've got a real great capitalism thing going on down there. Can't wait for Hasbro to release Monopoly Persian Gulf Edition. Pass go, collect 2 barrels of LNG. Coral reefs are also a large contributor to protecting coastlines during storms and limiting the erosion or loss of coastlines. Unfortunately, they are also affected by oil and gas production. Spilled or leaked oil can be deposited onto coral reefs through lowered water levels or rough seas that can cause coral reefs to die or slow their growth. On Qatar's northeastern coastline, there are also a number of mangroves, which are trees, not a classier version of man caves. I know, I was disappointed too. We actually have an episode on mangroves if you want to learn more about them. But in short, these water plants are really important to the region. Almost as important as Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's relationship is to my personal happiness. For the record, I wrote and recorded Wednesday's episode before Taylor Swift attended the Chiefs game, and let me tell you, this is the happiest I've ever been. Now my Swifty friends tolerate me talking to them about football, my football friends... well, they were already Swifties, let's be real. But I know they're really getting together just for me, and I could not be more grateful. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh yeah, mangroves. Mangroves are some of the most effective plants in the world at absorbing and storing carbon, provide habitats for many coastal species, and help protect coastlines from storm surges and erosion. Unfortunately, like the coral reefs, mangroves are also susceptible to fossil fuel production, pollution can cause defoliation, and even the death of plants. So as you may have guessed, there's just a couple environmental issues at the world's largest gas field. I guess that's a little obvious though, almost as obvious as a toddler with chocolate smeared all over their face claiming they haven't touched the cake. But what about the economy? Well, that's a bit more of a complicated story. This week, we are joined by Dr. Jeff Harkness, Associate Professor of Sociology at Rhode Island College and author of the book Changing Qatar: Culture, Citizenship, and Rapid Modernization. According to Dr. Harkness, the discovery of natural gas in Qatar was akin to winning the lottery.
I mean, imagine if suddenly you won the lottery and had $1 billion. I mean, your life would be nothing. It would be the same. It would be this head-spinning experience. And suddenly everyone's very interested in who you are than they weren't the day before. So I think it's just difficult in some ways for the country internally to grapple with sort of winning the lottery, as it were. And again, all the countries there to some degree had some experience of that. And you see how differently they've all sort of played those cards. It's interesting.
Due to that natural gas, Qatar has become one of the highest GDP per capita countries in the world. GDP per capita, or as economists call it, the fun-size economic candy bar of statistics, is essentially the average economic output per person in a country. It's like taking the entire wealth baked in the giant economic pie of a country and dividing it equally among everyone. But remember, it's just an average. It doesn't account for the fact that some people are having a pie-eating contest while others are just hoping for crumbs. It's a quick and dirty way to compare how countries are doing economically, but, like deciding who's the best James Bond based solely on their martinis, it might not give you the full picture. So Qatar has one of the highest GDPs per capita in the world today, but that certainly wasn't always the case. Qatar didn't discover its natural gas reserves until 1940. It's like when you find a crumpled up $20 bill in an old pair of pants, but, like, a lot better. Before these discoveries, Qatar's population was one of the poorest in the world, as pearling, fishing, and trade were the only major ways to make money in the area. In 1970, the average income was only $2,775 per year. But with expansion at the North Dome gas field, this number reached $85,000 per year by the mid-2010s. And when natural gas offers an economic boom as transformative as this one, it's no wonder that Qatari decision makers are so enthusiastic about expanding the North Dome gas field even further. They've really nailed down that influencer mindset. Dr. Harkness actually lived and taught in Qatar for some time, and he explained a little bit on some of those sentiments among Qatari citizens.
I had a lot of interaction with the Cutteries myself. People talk about how they're, you know, sort of the Cutteries live in a separate world from the expatriates, but on the university campus, it's populated by many Cutteries. And so I had lots of interactions with Cuttery citizens, and, you know, I felt like I got to know people very well. So the general temperature, I think the Cutteries feel, you know, sort of ambivalent about this encroaching modernization and what that's doing to the way of life there. At the same time, it's a very exciting place because of the wealth and the ability to do things, to get things done, and to not have money always be the thing that's standing in the way of progress. I mean, that's unique in some ways. And they have done some very unique and amazing things with that. But I think the general temperature from the privileged expatriates is that we're going to make our money and keep our mouths shut. And, you know, some people can do that for a couple of years, and some people can make a career doing that. But I think that's the bargain you make if you're going to live there. Take your money and keep your mouth shut. It's like Goodfellas.
As Dr. Harkness mentions, certain Qataris made significant wealth following the oil and gas discovery, and obviously they want to see that continue. But that money did not get distributed among Qataris anywhere close to equally. It's like the TikTok moms with 12 kids who give their oldest 3 sunny-side-up eggs and toast for breakfast, and their youngest a grape and half a muffin. For one, nearly 90% of Qatar's workforce consists of migrant workers. As such, the demographic and income insights get skewed due to the relatively small native citizen population of around 250,000. And in the wake of the fossil fuel industry's surge, the entire region has heavily relied on that external labor to erect new projects. Unfortunately, a substantial portion of these migrant workers positioned at the lower end still earn an annual income of approximately $1,920, and even those on the higher rungs rarely exceed $6,000 per year. That's a stark contrast to the country's actual wealth. If you divide Qatar's GDP by the number of native citizens, you're looking at $690,000 per person. This really puts in perspective the economic disparities that can occur between these two segments of the population. And according to Dr. Harkness, that inequality is reflected in society beyond just people's finances.
What we have found is also just sort of staggering inequalities as well. And that doesn't show up on when you see the World Cup on TV. But when you're there and when you live it, you can feel it in your bones, that inequality. I mean, it's inescapable. It's pervasive. It's pervasive in every single interaction you have with every single person, whether they're high status or low, because everyone's aware of their status. You can't help but to be in a place like that.
Those status differences can be seen within the workforce. Qatar has tried to implement legal amendments, but the challenges faced by migrant workers delve deeper into a web of issues, and a literal giant spider web would be the least of their problems. While these legal revisions aim to enhance worker rights, they only scratch the surface of a much larger problem. For one, there's the burden of worker debt, a consequence of improper recruitment practices. Migrant workers often find themselves entrapped in a cycle of financial dependence on the employers, which improves the chances of being exploited. It's like when you go out with your friend and your friend has made a bad habit of not bringing their wallet with them anywhere because the first few times they forgot it, it was an honest mistake and you covered for them, but by doing that, you have only enabled them to think that they can forget their wallet whenever they want and it won't be a big deal because you will always end up covering for them and yeah, you should have told them to remember to bring their wallet like the third time it happened, but now it's been 2 years into this friendship that is otherwise pretty solid, so you'd rather keep quiet than potentially jeopardize what has been the closest human relationship you've experienced in years. Like that. Two, there is also often an issue of delayed or completely unpaid wages. And I can relate. I asked my mom last week if she'd reimburse me for all the times I forgot to ask for allowance as a kid plus interest, and she said no. Definitely the same thing. In all seriousness, this problem of delayed or unpaid wages leaves migrant workers struggling to make ends meet, and is just a violation of their rights as workers. And as these migrant workers are often overcoming language barriers, navigating unfamiliar legal processes, and fearing potential reprisals, they can find it difficult to report abuses or file complaints against their employers. And again, in a country where status is extremely pronounced, it can be especially hard to speak out from a position with little to no power. Even if they do, there is also often a lack of enforcement to those existing labor laws that would protect the migrant workers, leaving employers with extra comfort in ignoring them. If there's one thing that doesn't go delayed or unpaid, it's the audacity. And with the expansion of the North Dome Project, the potential for more exploitation of migrant labor and human rights issues is about as imminent as another installment of Mission Impossible. Now you might be wondering, even if that natural gas wealth isn't making its way to workers, at least it's going to good projects, right? And to an extent, that's true. Not just cool events like the FIFA World Cup, but investments into infrastructure, tourism, and education. It would be a lot cooler if they'd invest into a giant water slide that starts at the top of their tallest building and ends in a tub of whipped cream. Unfortunately, though, even those investments bring some similar downsides.
In some ways, Qatar is this very interesting experiment because you are tasked with building, or let's say rebuilding, society having all this money. You know, so now you have all this money, you can do whatever you want with it. We can build whatever school system we want because money's no longer an object, which usually that's the biggest problem. But here, money's not the problem. We have the money, you can do it. So what have they built with all of that money? They built some very cool things like Education City, but they've also built Education City on the backs of a lot of very poor immigrant laborers who get paid almost nothing to work in virtually, well, let's just say very often bad conditions.
So even education has a part in exploiting the workers. No wonder the book Exploiting Workers for Dummies was conspicuously in the school libraries. And it's important to understand the good and the bad with these things. Education is great. Exploiting migrant workers is not. Both of those things can be true. The influx of funds from the fossil fuel industry has given Qatar the opportunity to shift its culture and try to rebrand itself on the international stage, like when a YouTuber gets canceled and then reframes their entire mission to be helping whatever thing they got canceled for. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Probably a bit of both. But for better or worse, Qatar clearly does want to use their wealth to achieve some global fame and promote a specific image. We talked about the World Cup, but now they've got their sights set arguably even higher.
They took, you know, those oil revenues and pursued big mega sports events. You know, they even want to host the Olympics there. You know, they're still trying to get the Olympics there, and we'll continue to pursue that. So there's a Qatar Olympics committee that works on this every single day. And the country, rightfully so, sees mega sporting events as an opportunity to nation brand to the world and to align the country with these esteemed values, whether they are true or not, but these esteemed values such as teamwork, cooperation, competition, you know, democracy. You know, sports allows them to latch on to those things that maybe aren't so much part of the country's culture, but allow them to sort of nation brand these ideals that are esteemed. Women's rights is another one that gets brought into the umbrella of sports to promote, you know, how empowered the women are. You know, so look at the sportswomen. But, you know, scratch below the surface, as I did. And again, you'll find a lot of the same things that we've seen for years.
There's a lot to unpack there. And while I'm usually the one to unpack 2 weeks after getting home from a trip, I'll give this a shot right now. Yes, Qatar is vying to host the 2036 Summer Olympic Games, and that would certainly put Qatar in front of the world. That would be another opportunity for the country to work on its image and promote national pride while doing so. It would also promote tourism. I know a lot of people are excited to see Mario and Sonic compete again. But as Dr. Harkness alludes to, hosting these sporting events can be a way to promote values without actually embodying them. Sports can be a great distraction. I mean, I'm in the middle of setting my fantasy lineup as I literally speak into this microphone right now. And if you want to help, I'm trying to figure out if I should put Jalen Waddle
in as my flex, or if I should do Michael Pittman Jr., because he's had some good games. I think Anthony Richardson is playing, or I could do Jordan Addison. I'm not sure about that, because he is kind of their third receiver. I guess fourth option, when you consider T.J. Hockenson, but...
Whoa, sorry. And if that worked on me, imagine what Qatar can pull off worldwide. By having all the focus on these major events and showing the success of countries and athletes, change can be portrayed with no long-term or actual effects, sort of like what Iron Man did for Robert Downey Jr. We sort of saw that play out with the FIFA World Cup, right?
I think that the World Cup was just another opportunity, the ultimate opportunity to nation brand. That's the largest, the most watched sporting event in the world. It's the most watched event on TV every year that it's on. So there's no larger platform. And, of course, they built outdoor air-conditioned stadiums. They had the, games moved to another time of the year. They, certainly bribed their way into gaining the rights to host in the first place. And then we saw nothing but human rights violations along the way. And, what they're going to do with a lot of these stadiums is ship them off to other countries. I mean, these stadiums aren't going to be used again. They're just sort of one and done. Nobody sees the incredible environmental devastation that occurs after these games are over and they're done and the TV cameras turn off and everybody goes home. And so, we'll see the fallout of that for years. And, what you saw on television looked great and looked beautiful, as everybody knew that it would, with just a few hiccups in the road, the alcohol and some things like that.
The FIFA World Cup was a good example of how these large-scale sporting events supported by the fossil fuel industry can be portrayed as an awesome experience, but have many underlying negative effects. Like the fact that you have to pretend you like soccer when, in reality, you're just a simp for Jason Sudeikis. And look, no one blames you. For the record, I do like soccer. I'm just a depressed Chelsea fan and would rather not talk about it. Dr. Harkness mentioned that there were many human rights violations throughout the process, and not just because Qatar pulled a Waystar Royco and requested a human footstool. There were countless labor issues, which sadly led to a large number of deaths in the migrant labor force in Qatar. From the time the tournament was awarded to Qatar in 2010 to February 2021, The Guardian reported that there was a total of 6,500 casualties of migrant workers from the countries of India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. Part of the issue is that average temperatures in Qatar can sometimes exceed 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Working in this extreme heat can put workers at greater risk of things like heart attacks, heat stroke, heat-related illnesses, or increased accidents from mental strain. Combine an extreme environment with poorly enforced labor laws, and you can see where this process went off the rails. Qatar also tried to use the 2022 World Cup to brand itself as an environmentally friendly nation, calling the event the first carbon-neutral World Cup. And that would be really cool if true. Unfortunately, according to Khaled Diab, communications director at Carbon Market Watch, the claim turned out to be completely bogus.
Well, I mean, we concluded after analyzing the carbon neutrality claim that it was essentially rather ludicrous. It was founded on very, very creative accounting and playing loose and fast with the numbers. The biggest issue we focused on were the emissions related to the construction of infrastructure, most notably the stadiums.
And in that sense, trying to create an environmentally friendly brand around the World Cup actually backfired on Qatar. Sure, some may have just seen the carbon neutrality claim and that's it, but when news outlets around the world start drawing attention to the bogus nature of the claim, it reflects badly on the entire thing. I mean, when you hear this clip, if you're like me, you're not just thinking, all right, they had some carbon emissions. You're thinking, what else are they lying about? Did they really delete their Tinder? Did Argentina actually win? In fact, a Swiss court later ruled that the claim FIFA made had no evidence to back it up. So as much as Qatar might think they can rebrand through these events, news stories like these show that they may actually have to walk the walk. As much as I do appreciate Qatar's love for natural gas for all the wealth and notoriety it brought, there may really be an economic case to move on. The industry offers almost the entirety of the country's wealth, but as every finance guru tells you, have diversity in your portfolio. Qatar's government receives 81% of its revenue from natural gas exports, and 60% of GDP earnings come from natural gas, leaving the whole country completely dependent on the resource. And right now, while LNG remains lucrative, the world is shifting toward cleaner energy sources. It's not immediate. Asia continues to provide a growing market, and due to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, Qatar could step up to fill some of the natural gas demand in Europe as they cut ties with Russian gas. But this demand won't last forever. If clean energy becomes dominant on the global stage before Qatar diversifies its economic output, that's setting up a really risky bet where they could be left living in the past. It's like how our comedy producer Mo is still pitching succession jokes. It's over. Roman and Jerry will never be a thing, and you just have to live with it. If you couldn't tell, she actually wrote that joke, so apparently she has found a way to keep pitching succession jokes. Is Qatar going to host every sporting event ever at the expense of their environment, migrant workers, and future economic prospects? Of course not. Is Mo going to stop slipping in succession jokes? Apparently same answer, I guess, as long as I keep reading them. In our next segment, we'll explore why Qatar has a lot to gain from a more sustainable future, opportunities for clean energy development, and why Kendall's name was indeed underlined and not crossed out. Mo, I still haven't seen the finale. You're really walking on eggshells here.
Have you ever wanted to have a quality define your personality but don't read or watch TV? Then Diet Coke is for you. Garlic Girl where? Cumber Bitch who? I'm a Cokehead through and through. Diet Coke is my love. Diet Coke is my life. We changed the laws, and now Diet Coke is legally my wife. Diet Coke. Not a cult.
So where do we go from here? Before getting into specific solutions, I want to think a bit about mindset. With some of the carbon bombs we've covered in the past, the profits from fossil fuels have been used in some less than savory ways. Not sweet, not spicy, not even umami. We recently covered Russia's Bovenyenkovo gas field, where these natural gas profits are literally funding a war. But the mindset in Qatar is a little different, and I think gives some reason for hope off the bat. Is Qatar doing everything perfectly? No, far from it. But as Dr. Harkness explains, they are doing some cool things.
One of the things that I think is so great about Qatar is that they do use their money to do very cool things. They're not just like, hey, let's build a bunch of bombs and let's get nuclear weapons. And, you know, I mean, they have some great ideas, like let's revolutionize our system of education. Let's rebuild it from the, you know, from the very beginning, you know, lowest stages all the way up through the university system. Let's take our money and, you know, bring in, you know, great thinkers and academics and scholars and, you know, institutions from all over the world. And, you know, we're going to have this melting pot of a campus. I mean, they have great ideas. And so that always gives me a lot of hope, you know, that they can take those money, take all that money and take those good intentions and all those smart people and really do something, you know, that makes a contribution. What I'd like to see from a place like Qatar is give us something new, give us a new model rather than just the same old inequality in sheep's clothing.
And to me, that's a much easier jumping off point. Qatar has money, and it seems like they do want to use that money to make their country and even the world better. Maybe that's too generous, but at the very least, they clearly want to cultivate a positive image. And in that vein, there are a lot of reasons why Qatar might want to transition to a sustainable future. We've talked about the environmental and labor issues, we've talked about how global economies are changing, and LNG might not be the booming market it once was, we talked about how Qatar wants to establish a global brand as beloved as Bigelow Green Tea. But there's another major reason why Qatar should be concerned about natural gas, and that is climate change. Being a peninsula, the climate change strategy for urban planning and urban development sector in the state of Qatar says they are the country most vulnerable to sea level rise. Sea level rise is caused by the melting of glaciers, the thermal expansion of the water as it continues to increase in temperature, and because your mom decided to take a swim. If there were a 1 meter sea level rise by 2100, which is very possible, 3% of Qatar's area would be affected. The vast majority of Qatar's activities are on the shoreline. Doha, Qatar's capital, with around 92% of Qatar's population, is on average 3 meters above sea level, with many surrounding areas being close to sea level already. Flood simulations found that within the Doha city center, many areas would end up being flooded with up to 2 meters of sea level rise. Free indoor pool, anyone? No? Oh, right, that's a bad thing. This sea level rise could affect a number of things, including another big climate-related issue, water availability. Being in a desert, Qatar doesn't have access to a lot of fresh water, but for some reason has an abundant amount of Baja Blast. But that doesn't stop people from using a lot of the water in the area. Industries and municipalities use around 80% of the freshwater supply, and households in the country consume an average of 430 liters of water per day, giving them one of the highest domestic water consumption rates in the world, and with lots of water intake, must mean a lot of toilet flushes. At the same time, the nation's dry desert climate experiences erratic rainfall, with an average annual precipitation ranging from only 50 to 80 millimeters. To put that in perspective, the US had around 722 millimeters of annual precipitation in 2022. That's 11 times more. So where does Qatar get their fresh water? Well, 98% of it comes from something called a desalination plant, something Dr. Harkness talked a little bit about.
You know, as far as the place itself, it's a desert, and it's always been a desert. It's, you know, always been incredibly hot. But now they have built, you know, these skyscrapers everywhere. They have these desalination plants everywhere because there's no water other than that. No natural water there. They have to import everything. And so, I mean, literally they're you know, flying in and bringing in by boat all of these things that everybody needs.
A desalination plant is a sophisticated industrial facility specifically engineered to address water scarcity by converting seawater or brackish water into fresh potable water through the process of desalination, like Poseidon if he was a bro in a suit. This process involves the removal of salts and other impurities, making the water suitable for drinking, agricultural irrigation, and other industrial applications. And sea level rise can actually affect this. Since Qatar's geology is very porous, rising seawater can actually infiltrate the freshwater on the land, in that increasing salinity can reduce the efficiency of these desalination plants. It's like the one red sock in a load of whites just ruining everything. In that confluence of issues, lack of water availability and sea level rise threatening desalination plants, is really not good. It's a little ironic though, right? They're getting more water, just the wrong water. It's like if I try to replace the American cheese on my burger with cheddar, they accidentally give me American, and then to apologize, they give me a pack of Kraft singles. And speaking of being in a desert, to put a cherry on top of all of this, Qatar is also getting hotter. So I actually wouldn't eat that cherry. It's probably been sitting in the sun. In fact, a 2022 study in Nature found the average temperature in the country increased by 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit from the time of the FIFA World Cup bid in 2010 to the actual World Cup in 2022. Aside from the Arctic, which is warming faster than your apartment since you forgot to turn off the oven. Sorry, I chose violence today. I promise, your apartment is fine. But otherwise, Qatar is in one of the fastest warming regions of the world. Rising temperatures can further impact water availability, quality of life, impacting agriculture, and melting your ice cream really fast. It can also, as we mentioned before, exacerbate the aforementioned issues with regard to worker exploitation. With all these climate challenges, Qatar does know that they need to be concerned. In fact, within the Qatar National Vision of 2030 framework, the country committed to a 25% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Whether or not they'll pull that off remains to be seen, but it is meaningful that they set the goal and acknowledge the importance of it, because from there are so many possibilities to actually reach and exceed that goal while improving life for Qataris. To start, let's just throw in a free hot dog for everyone. You know, just for fun. So what options does Qatar have? One option is to try to make operations cleaner at the North Dome gas field itself. The gas field is operated by Qatar Energy, a state-owned company, and in 2021, they announced the commitment to curbing greenhouse gas emissions by a quarter by 2030, accompanied by a dedicated investment of $170 million. Their endeavor is primarily targeting methane leaks. They're implementing what's called the Jetty Boil-Off Project, which is just an excellent name, and aims to capture boil-off gas at the LNG berths, which are what they call the terminals, not gas baby deliveries. This gas that they capture can then be used in other operations, preventing the methane from leaking into the atmosphere, which helps the climate, and prevents them from wasting perfectly good energy. The project is projected to reduce carbon dioxide equivalent emissions by 1 million metric tons annually, which is a lot of gas babies. Of course, this solution doesn't change the fact that these are fossil fuels and they'll emit greenhouse gases when they're burned, but knowing that the North Dome gas field won't disappear tomorrow, nor should it, it's certainly smart to try to make the process as efficient and sustainable as possible. Qatar also has plenty of carbon capture and utilization opportunities. This is essentially the process of capturing carbon for other products that would reduce waste and create value. As Jack Johnson once said, reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. For example, Texas A&M University at Qatar has scientists who developed a system called CarGen that takes carbon emissions and turns it into something called carbon nanotubes. These are tightly rolled sheets of graphene, often dubbed miracle material. Carbon nanotubes are being considered for use in technologies like solar panels and batteries, which can then be used to store energy from renewable sources. Looking ahead, there's even talk of potential applications in groundbreaking concepts like a space elevator, which, if it's anything like Willy Wonka, consider my ticket bought. Don't ask me to explain the science behind that, but in theory it would be cables that would be able to bring things into orbit. What's extremely interesting about this potential method is that it doesn't release more CO2 into the atmosphere, unlike other techniques. So far, CarGen isn't available for licensing and commercial use, but it is available for the next trending baby name, and it could be a promising technology that could help Qatar reduce emissions in the long run. Qatar also has potential to build up some clean energy industries, which would not just help the climate, but also diversify their economy. Being a desert, perhaps the most significant area is its solar potential. According to Sustainable Qatar, the country has over 9 hours of sunlight running per day. Currently, the Al Kharsah Project, or Siraj 1, stands as Qatar's inaugural large-scale solar power plant, which is set to meet around 10% of the nation's electricity requirements during peak usage periods. The project comprises roughly 2 million bifacial solar panels designed to harness sunlight from both the front and back sides of each panel. Thankfully, the bifacial panels didn't turn into vigilantes and swear revenge on Batman Commissioner Gordon and everyone else involved in the death of Rachel. Yeah, we'd better keep an eye on those two-faced solar panels. This project was built in 2021 and is 80 kilometers west of Doha. Aside from helping power the country, this project and its 800 megawatts of electricity will actually help meet most of the electricity needs of the North Dome expansion project. That's right, even the fossil fuel companies are sassy for solar. But the solar energy could be the focus too. This particular project could actually triple its capacity and perhaps even lead to less need for fossil fuel extraction. Qatar also has potential for wind energy, especially in the space between Bahrain and Qatar. The wind isn't too strong, but it's great for using small wind turbines to pump water or make electricity in remote places or farms that are far from cities, like a fun little Rube Goldberg machine. This could be another effective way to diversify their energy production and reduce emissions at the same time. But being the innovative country they are, it's no surprise to learn that Qatar has some much more creative ideas than solar and wind. For example, in 2011, Qatar implemented a project called the Domestic Solid Waste Management Center. This facility has a dual purpose, managing waste and contributing electricity to the grid. The plant converts organic and green waste into valuable resources like fertilizers and biogas. This biogas is then turned into electricity, powering the nation while also reducing waste. The current surplus energy it generates is around 50 megawatts daily, which is enough to power around 47,000 homes. Qatar announced plans in 2020 for a new plant to be built as well, and if they want to take my trash, they are more than welcome. I'd rather ship it to Qatar than have to go into the smelly garbage disposal closet and touch that handle. Qatar is also venturing into the realm of blue hydrogen, which could be a more climate-friendly way to continue using the North Dome gas field's resources. Blue hydrogen is not the next Marvel superhero, but rather hydrogen crafted from natural gas using a process called steam methane reforming. The chemical composition of methane is CH4, one carbon atom and four hydrogen atoms. Rather than using the carbon for energy, we can use the hydrogen. I mean, there's already a buy one get four free deal right in front of us. Steam methane reforming mixes natural gas, steam, and a catalyst to separate the hydrogen. Like LNG, transporting liquid hydrogen is a complex and energy-demanding process, primarily because of the need to compress hydrogen from its gaseous state to a liquid form. Unfortunately, this compression stage also involves significant carbon dioxide emissions, as fossil fuels are employed to fuel that compression process. But that could change, and there are plenty of innovations going on to address these issues. If some of these challenges can be addressed, blue hydrogen could be an energy source that Qatar could cultivate and export very similarly to how they do now with LNG while making progress on their climate goals. And Qatar has actually started this journey, with Qatar Energy's recent collaboration with Korea's Hydrogen Convergence Alliance. Sadly, a collab with Mr. Beast was out of their budget. This partnership aims to help the hydrogen sector in both nations, setting the stage for not just industry growth, but an expansion of the hydrogen supply. This could help Qatar continue to build its international connections while also aiding in further diversification of its energy production. What about the marine environments we talked about earlier? There are actually options to protect those too in the face of fossil fuel extraction. For example, recently, Qatar successfully moved 7,500 live coral reefs from nearshore pipelines to safer offshore protected regions. Those real estate fish are really working their tails off. Qatar also constructed 200 artificial reef models to further support marine life and give a home to marine life, sort of like your brother-in-law and his model train city. The expansion of protected areas could help slow the decline of Qatar's bony fish populations in the midst of fossil fuel production. Obviously, in the long term, it's a lot easier to protect these areas by reducing or eliminating harmful activities, but again, that stuff doesn't happen overnight. It's absolutely worth taking steps in the short term to try to improve these issues while an energy transition takes place. Obviously, all of these options have their merits, but they're also a small piece of the puzzle. How do you handle the issues with migrant workers? How do you cultivate the right global image and be sincere in doing so? How do you diversify not just energy, but the entire nation's economy to avoid traps of being too reliant on one resource that the world is working to transition away from? How do you tell your friend who keeps forgetting their wallet that maybe it's not the wallet they're forgetting, but the basic principles of friendship, and you've considered setting up a wallet reminder alarm on their phone, or gifting them one of those wallet locators for their birthday, but then you think, is that too passive-aggressive? Or maybe they're doing it as a secret test of your patience, or worse, they're part of a covert sociological experiment studying the limits of human generosity, and you've contemplated just bringing two wallets next time, one for you and one for them, but then does that mean you're just feeding into their forgetfulness? Or perhaps it's an elaborate ruse and one day they'll surprise you with all the money they owe you in a giant cake on your birthday, but then what if you're like me and have a severe peanut allergy and they got you a cake that says made in a facility that processes peanuts so you can't eat the cake and therefore can't obtain the money they owe you without risking death? And if a friendship is built on the back of forgotten wallets and unsaid grievances, is it really a friendship or just an elaborate IOU dance that neither of you knows the steps to? These are the questions that Qatar has to consider as they move forward. And as we zoom out and consider these questions, I want to return us to Dr. Harkness's research, specifically his book. While natural gas catalyzed much of Qatar's transition into wealth, it is far from the whole story. I asked Dr. Harkness what the big takeaways from his book and his time in Qatar were, and here's a bit of what he had to share.
That's a big, big, big question because the book covers so many different things. But I guess what I found was that there is a sort of wrestling with the onslaught of modernization and the pace of modernization and trying to sort of maintain something that resembles culture and tradition and a way of life. It's very difficult when the population changes so quickly and there's such a rapid influx of wealth into the country. It's a rather head-spinning experience. And so I think that what I found was that there was a grappling with these two things, and that showed up in all of these interesting places. It showed up in clothing. It showed up in architecture. It showed up in language. It showed up in dating and marriage practices. So this sort of wrestling, if you want to call it that, between the forces of modernization and tradition, we're sort of playing out in all of these different platforms. Sports was certainly another one. And so I became interested in all of the places that this sort of appeared, sometimes visually and sometimes symbolically. And I think that was important. That was part of the sort of grappling with these two things, the changing role of women in that part of the world, the changing class structure in that part of the world. And then also just so many people who are traveling and coming from other parts of the world. I mean, living in a country where 90% of the people who live there come from another country, there's just really almost nothing like it. I never, you know, I mean, in terms of my findings, it was like I never got to the end. I never said, okay, I'm done. I figured it all out. I could have probably stayed there forever, you know, coming up with new and interesting things to study. There was just so much.
To give you a little more of a taste, I also asked if he had any more specific examples that surprised or intrigued him during his research, and here's one interesting one that he shared.
One of the first ones was what was happening with dating and marriage. The traditional studies of modernization have found that typically as countries modernize, you tend to see rates of consanguineous marriage going down. So interfamily marriage reducing as the countries modernize, bring in institutions such as higher education and things like that. So typically that's the trajectory. That's what's sort of expected to be seen. But there are some places, and Qatar turns out to be one of them, where it's gone in the other direction, where the rates of consanguineous marriage actually went up in light of modernization. And there's some other things that went in sort of ways that we wouldn't expect either. Another one more recently is there's been this incredible influx of women into the university system. And we would assume that that would result in a lot of Qatari women out in the workforce afterwards, you know, with those college degrees working. But that's actually not what we've seen. We've seen the rates of working for those college-educated women actually go down. It's not what we would expect. So that allows, you know, the sociologists to get in there and do a little bit of theorizing as to, you know, why these trends might be. But again, it's a, you know, I saw it as sort of a wrestling with some of these ideas of modernity and tradition, the more traditional marriage versus the more modern version of it. And again, these are tropes as well that are problematic too. These sort of definitions of modernity and tradition are very highly problematic. So, but they are sort of archetypes or tropes that everyone understands. And we sort of could probably agree what goes into those boxes, however problematic those boxes are.
Now, I know that's not about the North Dome gas field specifically, but I wanted to share it for two reasons. One, it's just really interesting. And by the way, there's a lot more interesting stuff we covered in that interview if you want to check out the extended cut of this episode by joining our Patreon. And two, it sheds light on why I feel hopeful when it comes to Qatar's future prospects. It's not that natural gas was transformative for Qatar and now everything is some prosperous napping in a hammock while koalas bring you mojitos paradise. Natural gas brought some good, some bad, and some that we're still figuring out. And for all the many problems we discussed, it does seem that Qatar does have an eye to the future, does love to buck trends, and does care about its role and perception in the international community. To me, that's a whole lot of reason for hope. And if Qatar can find ways to transition away from natural gas extraction at the North Dome gas field and make it more sustainable in the meantime, we can help the climate, diversify Qatar's economy, protect air and water, improve Qatar's global image, and know in our hearts that if there were a season 5 of Succession, Roman Jerry would totally be canon. Maybe Mo and I do need to talk about there being too many Succession jokes. I mean, that one didn't even have a segue. Anyway, that wraps up episode 128 of The Sweaty Penguin. Take 2 minutes, help out the show, and get a shout-out at the end of the show by leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple or Podcast Addict, or join our Patreon at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. You get merch, bonus content, and more. Clips today came from Semaphore. Special thanks to our Emperor Penguin patrons, Lawrence Harris and Brownie Central. Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.